Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and you find our research interesting, please leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does go a long way in helping us out. You can find more about us and the research that we do by heading over to Instagram and searching our name. As always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subjects. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Teenage Wasteland. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. So, I'll cut to the chase. This episode is not sunshine and flowers. But then again, what Dead Souls episode ever is? I recently went to stay for a few days in London with an old friend of mine. He's a successful counsellor today, but for a period in his early 20s, a happy future seemed uncertain. He went through something that strained our friendship, and in all honesty, lost him many of the relationships that he had in his life, and for a few years, he existed in a very dark place. While I was staying at his place, he pitched to me an interesting idea for a podcast episode. And it's usually at this point that most people tell me about a ghost story, a UFO sighting, or some true crime case that fascinates them. But my friend didn't do that. Instead, his pitch was simply, quote, me, unquote. He wanted to contribute to an episode about him and what he had been through. I liked the idea right away, and I said I'd produce it absolutely, but on one condition, that he wrote it. So here in all its glory is that episode by my good friend Jack Clements. I hope you find it interesting, and maybe even valuable in some way. Before we begin though, and for purposes of clarity, whilst these are Jack's words, the narration will be me. It's somewhat awkward at the offset, given that he makes reference to me at the start. However, I'll push past that, as I really want to share this story. Also, whilst we had considered using an actor to voice Jack in this episode, we felt that ultimately an entire episode of a stranger's voice might make the episode stand out as different in some way, or project a different tone to normal. And Jack, well, Jack is, shall we say, radio shy. So here I am. Anyway, let's get into it. These are Jack's words and Jack's story. I'd like to title this episode Teenage Wasteland. My name is Jack Clements. I met Jamie Black at the University of Cardiff, where we were both studying psychology. Jamie was a few years older than me, but we definitely connected on the same level. We became fast friends. Jamie was possibly one of the most accepting and open-minded people I had ever met, non-judgmental, and a complete sweetheart. Some of his ideas and theories were out there, and still are, but I loved how his mind worked and I loved his conviction. I had just moved halfway across the country to a new city and knew no one when I met him. Jamie had just walked away from pursuing music and he was exercising those demons. So we were both starting fresh paths. Maybe that's how we found each other and connected. I'm thankful that Jamie is still my close friend today. I almost fucked that up and ruined it. God knows I did with most of my other friends. 100% my own fault and actions. Jamie would agree with that if he wasn't so sweet about it. But I'm grateful that he has allowed my voice to air on his show, to give me his platform and audience. This won't be an easy listen, but it will be an honest one. I'd like to share with you my story, if you'll have me. I'll try not to take up too much of your time. It's hard to describe how heroin feels. William S. Burroughs called it vegetable serenity. Melvin Burgess called it Chinese magic. I adore the poetic prose that they lend to the myth, to give it legend and credence when all it deserves is wrath and vitriol. To me, heroin felt like waking up with the sun shining on my face in clean, silken sheets. Having a gentle breeze blow over you, gently licking at your soft skin. It felt like pure contentment. No, serene happiness. Well, at least for a while, until I came to know the torment that addiction would bring. The first time I became aware of people taking heroin, I was 18 years old and I was at a house party and in my first year at the University of Cardiff in South Wales. The house party was in quite a wealthy suburb, so it was the last place I would have expected to find drugs. At least so I thought at the time. Now, of course, I realised that the rich are at it just as much as the working classes. During this house party, various small groups of people were slipping off into closed rooms or popping upstairs for a brief time, whilst everyone else whispered about what they thought they were doing. The party was at the home of a musician who my friend Ed had met through playing in local bands. Cardiff had a pretty vibrant and close-knit music scene in those days. It's pretty dead now though, sadly. A couple of weeks later, Ed and his musician friend invited me to another house party in the same neighbourhood. The house was owned by some rich bohemian hippie woman, and I was surprised to see so many people doing drugs in the open at the party. There was no shame, or the need to hide it there. The hippie homeowner was quite a bit older than us. She was an artist with outrageous stories, a proper raconteur. She was casually walking around the party smoking heroin off a mini Martell cognac bottle and sharing it around. At first I said I didn't want any, but then I admit, I got curious. Part of me wanting to go to university was to experience new things. I'm a country boy and I grew up in the rural ass end of nowhere. And though it may have been the biggest mistake of my life, the thought of trying heroin intrigued me. The idea excited me. It was exotic. It was rock and roll. But if I'm totally honest, after inhaling a few times, I was completely underwhelmed. Was that it? I thought. I felt warm and comfortable, but there was no extreme. There was no debilitating high like I'd seen in the movies. There was no groundbreaking moment of revelation of a new amazing discovery. There was also absolutely no after effects. A few weeks later, I bumped into the woman with a Martell cognac bottle. I offered to do a favour for her to help her out. As a thank you, she offered me a tiny bag of heroin. I declined it initially. I said I didn't want it. I wouldn't do anything with it anyway. I tried it, and I thought it was pretty boring. But she told me to take it as a gift. To be polite, I did. The little baggie sat in my room for a month or so. I didn't even give it a second thought. But one night, I finally opened the bag with a close friend of mine. We orchestrated what we thought was a magical, poetic experience. We lit candles and set an ambience with some vintage records. We smoked it, and I vomited at first. But I persevered, smoking small amounts throughout the evening, talking and talking until the early hours. The next day, I didn't think about it all that much. It was an out-of-the-ordinary experience, sure, but I had university and work to get back to. The rest of the bag of heroin sat in my room. But the following weekend, there was not much on, so I invited my friend back to hang out and smoke again. Like having some cocaine on a night out or smoking weed at a friend's house, this would be something I only did now and then with certain friends, I thought. How dangerous could this stuff actually be? I thought to myself. Yes, I knew it was addictive, but everyone is different, right? Maybe I'd handle it well. I deluded myself into thinking that as heroin was originally sold legally in pharmacies to treat coughs and even given to children, that it can't be as bad as all the scary stories I had heard. So when the bag ran out, of course I replaced it. It was cheaper than cocaine and alcohol. £10 could have me high for 2 days. Slowly, I was getting more of the drug, more from the experience, and I began to appreciate the lure. Soon I was getting it regularly, mainly through friends at that point. But I noticed that each time I took the bag off one of them, they had stolen from me a little bit more, giving me less than they should. So I started to seek it out on my own from dealers. Dealers who I'd previously bought weed or coke from. As I began to buy it for myself, it also became less and less a social thing. It grew into something I would do on my own. My friends were staying in a lot, studying for our end of year exams. I pretended I was doing the same. But in reality, I was just getting high night after night. I was smoking heroin 3 or 4 times a week. That bitter smell of vinegar that whet my appetite before I escaped into the night. I was by now feeling the full high of the drug too. And the worst part was that I was entirely functional. A chippy, we used to call them. Fully functional members of society with a job, commitments, a social life, paying rent and bills, all while maintaining a crippling drug habit that others couldn't see. I found it easy to study and go to lectures with no hangover and no come down. Literally zero repercussions, I thought. I was getting good grades on my university work. My performance at work was unhindered. I thought of heroin as my treat, if anything. I told myself I was being good because I wasn't going out all night and because I could, well, control my habit rather than it control me. I wasn't addicted, I tell myself, just indulging myself. I'll stop when I need to, when I get bored of it. I'll just cut it off. Without the guilt and regret that a hangover can bring, I didn't notice the side effects of my habit creeping up on me, building up under the surface. I had a permanent cold, and I felt a lot more emotional than I usually did, but I thought it was just the stress of my job and university. Plus, you know, it was winter. Everyone had a cold, right? Students pass that shit around anyway. When my girlfriend pointed out that I was going through withdrawal, that shocked me a bit. It was the first acknowledgement that I might have a problem. But it was someone else who could see it in me. I thought I was hiding it well. So I decided to take a break for a couple of weeks, promising myself that I would get clean and reset to zero. Although stupidly, at the back of my mind, and even though I would have denied it at the time, even to myself, I thought if I reset to zero, then I can start again a short while later, as if starting it for the first time once again. How stupid. I lasted less than 10 days before I gave up and started smoking H again. This time, however, something had changed. My tolerance levels had increased. And within just 2 months, I started to experience the first symptoms of full withdrawal in between smoking hits. The withdrawal was so painful that I began to worry that I could no longer stop. I panicked. I tried researching online to find other people who had experienced something similar, like not being alone or not being the first to feel this way. Both of those would comfort me a little. What I found, though, I was quick to dismiss. It felt irrelevant to me. It was either help for addicts or forums where people compared the best dealer in their local area. Neither of these people were me, I thought. I even scrolled through one page about getting support for addiction and remember thinking how bad I felt for those people, how awful the drug must be. And this was literally me. I was looking for help and understanding whilst being in denial at the same time. Who the hell was I? What the hell had I become? I kept reasoning with myself that I didn't have a problem because, well, I was functioning. I was handling this shit. But in all reality, and looking back, I was an average, normal, just like everyone else, drug addict, completely under the thumb of my vice. This idea was reinforced by the fact that while the rest of my friends worked in bars and retail at this time to support their studies, I had a great job working for an events management company. I was making good money, but wasting it just as fast as I earned it. I blew up to £1,000 each week. That's about $1,300. This was just on drugs. On heroin. I started smoking it in secret at work in the bathroom or out the back of the office. I'm lucky people generally don't know what H smells like. I even found a backup dealer near my office in case I needed an emergency hit. Just like you do. I think the first time things impacted my job was when I was at a party that I had organized. It was a professional event for a client, and I started to feel sick. I knew I wasn't poorly, though. I knew what it was. I ran outside to try and find a dealer on the street, but I couldn't. With no fix to make me feel better, I had to tell my boss that I was sick and get a cab home and wait for the drugs to arrive. It kept going this way for a while. I started to stay high around the clock while I worked, borrowed money from people, and sold my belongings on eBay, while jumping from living situation to living situation. When I tried to engage with my friends, there was a lot of backlash from them. Friends who I had abandoned, not seen in months, and paid no mind to. Their hostility towards me for not having been around much quickly turned to suspicion and fear. They tried to intervene, to ask what was wrong with me, but I was so used to lying that I managed to talk my way out of any real confrontation. And besides, they had lost all trust in me by this point. I began avoiding my old friends altogether and only making time for other people that had managed to convince themselves that heroin was no big deal. My only friends left were drug friends. It was more convenient that way, and if it started to feel lonely, well, then I would just smoke until I felt nothing. They say that nobody hits rock bottom, but rather you live it, and that is what happened to me. I lived rock bottom for around 2 years. When I looked in the mirror, I accepted the skeletal image that looked back at me. I lost teeth. My skin was awful. I had sores and bloody wounds that wouldn't heal. My arms were infected. When I put on my clothes, I was used to their baggy fit. They hung off me like a silk suit on a skeleton. Like, you need food and water to function. But I needed heroin to survive and be content. And my whole life revolved around getting it, taking it, rinse and repeat. By that time, the heroin high wasn't enough. And so, for a few months, I started mixing heroin with crack. My dealer called it brandy and champagne. It sounded classy and exotic, but it was quite literally the furthest thing away from that. On the one hand, it made heroin feel new again, but it also made me unravel even quicker. It was more expensive, and I was soon completely broke. I could no longer go to work, as I was a skeletal, shivering, scabby mess, and I could no longer afford my rent and bills, or to buy food. My weight dropped to just 94 pounds, and I'm 6'1" in height. I was also struggling to afford the drug, and in between taking hits, I was now sober and in withdrawal for long enough to realize that I couldn't live like this anymore. I had hit rock bottom, then sank another 100 feet lower. Taking yourself off heroin or going cold turkey, simply put, is hell on earth. No exaggeration, a sheer living hell. My insides felt like they were on fire and about to burst out of my skin. And yet my skin was coated in cold sweat. It hurt just to move or be touched. All I could do was lay in bed, immersed in anguish and self-loathing. The worst depression, anxiety, and physical pain I had ever experienced in my life came over me in waves, I was also dangerously underweight and unhealthy, but just the thought of food and drink made me vomit. I knew I couldn't get clean by going cold turkey. I genuinely thought that it would kill me. It crushed me mentally and physically. I was emotionally super unstable. So with that, my girlfriend Katie, who had decided she wanted to get clean with me, found a place called CDT Lifeline. They were an inner city community drug team. I went to their drop-in clinic and they put me on a medication called Subutex, an opiate substitute that helps addicts wean off heroin. But when you start the Subutex program, your body has to be completely without heroin for 24 hours. But if you don't wait long enough, your body is thrown into precipitated withdrawal. Essentially, all the heroin in your body is displaced all at once, and your body experiences an extreme version of withdrawal symptoms. Now, regular withdrawal felt like it was killing me, so I couldn't handle that times 10 as an extreme version. But I tried several times and I could never make it the full 24 hours without heroin. I was at the threshold of death. I remember curled up in a ball in the corner of my girlfriend's flat, screaming and crying in agony, pleading to die, and crying out for my mother. I had never ever experienced pain and misery even close to this in my entire life. At one point, I was in so much pain and so convinced that I was going to die that I actually caved in, and at 22 years of age, I called my mum and begged her to come and help me. I had never seen her cry like she did on that day. My mum was a single mum. I was all the family that she had, and her heart broke the day that she saw what I had become. I had killed her own baby right before her eyes. When my mum arrived, she immediately called an ambulance. I was so weak and sick that the paramedics had to carry me out. I told the doctor at the hospital what happened, and he said I needed to take the time to complete a recovery program with methadone or Subutex. I was in floods of tears and saying that I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to return to my life. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to close my eyes and for it all to go away. I told my mum what happened, fully expecting her to say that she never wanted to speak to me again. But instead, she took me home and supported me through my recovery. She was my mum. A mixture of cognitive behavioral therapy and courses of Subutex were my lifelines to getting clean. But I will say that with physical sobriety came a painful mental come down as I began to realize that I had destroyed my life at 22. After several weeks in recovery, therapy, and the Subutex, the withdrawals had subsided. But what followed was the most crippling depression and mental health crash of my entire life. I can't describe how miserable I was. I had felt no pain or sadness for years while I was on heroin. Now, I was paying back tenfold with the depression that I was experiencing. I'd lay in bed and try to sleep the day away, or just stare at a point on the wall for hours on end. Each day when I woke, I just wished to go back to sleep and wish the day away for the next, then the next. Eventually, after several months, I accepted that I needed a job, but I was worried that I would just blow it. All my confidence and self-worth had been decimated. There was a month where I couldn't even look at my CV and would have a panic attack at the thought of even applying for a job. The cognitive behavioral therapy was instrumental in helping me overcome that fear, though. After a few sessions, I called a friend who worked for a charity for young people, and she asked me to help her organize a 2-week training course that she was running. It was the first thing I had done in almost a year. I knew I needed to get out of bed every morning, and it made me finally feel like I was doing something valuable. And with baby steps, slowly starting to return to some kind of normal life, although I accepted that I would never be the same again. The drugs had changed me so much, I wasn't even sure who I was before them anymore. That person didn't seem like me, but neither did the person who I had become. Today I've been clean for more than 10 years. I have a great job, a girlfriend of 5 years, and my life is going great. I never thought I would be in this position ever again, and I'm so thankful every day that I got a second chance. I value normality so much that just keeping hold of it is my catalyst for going forward. Now and then, if I'm really upset, I think of when I used to smoke H, but it's always a fleeting thought that I would never act on. The fear and disgust always come with those thoughts now, thankfully. Nothing could suck me back into that life because I'm still dealing with the repercussions a decade later. Rebuilding my relationships with friends and family that I destroyed took years. Some I couldn't salvage, and I'm haunted by that to this day. The loss of confidence I suffered was huge too. I'm a shadow of the man that I once was. I used to be so outgoing, self-assured and positive, but now I'm a shy, retreating, anxious wallflower. I get flashes of my past life. I'll hear a song, or I'll pass a street that I used to frequent, and it can trigger thoughts and memories. It'll transport me back to old feelings of pain and heaviness. One time a few years back, I saw one of the old dealers on the street. I was walking with my girlfriend and I was terrified he would try to sell to me again in front of her. Thankfully, he just said, "You look really well, buddy," and walked away. Heroin and drugs in general are heavily romanticized across art, music, film, and the media. So it's not surprising that many, many people in their millions are smoking, snorting, and injecting them and feeling like they're in some sort of secret members club. But I desperately wish I knew beforehand that with heroin, there was no tipping point. There is no visible point of no return. Even though time passes between casual heroin use and full-blown addiction, it's incredibly difficult to discern at what point you have a problem. At what point the light shining from your face has turned into the darkest days of your entire life. Occasionally, I'll meet someone will find out about my past, and they will try to bond with me over past drug stories. I just walk away. If you're a person who still romanticizes or looks fondly on drugs, then you have either never experienced them or you're an addict. There is nothing glamorous, cool, interesting, edgy, or sublime about heroin. Art is bollocks. It's pestilence and disease in a habit. Think of the one thing you loathe and despise the most. Taking heroin is that, literally that. I don't know what I could say to my younger self to discourage trying H. I don't know if I have the vocabulary to emphasize just how it is one of the biggest mistakes and worst decisions that I would ever make. No, it's the biggest mistake. I was one of the lucky ones though. I survived and came out the other side. Most don't. I'm lucky I get to spend the rest of my life apologizing. I'm lucky I still have a life. So many of the drug friends that I had back then are now dead. The small few who are still alive are still addicts, and I can no longer see them. For my own survival, I need to stay away. Though it's another thing that haunts me, as I wish I could help them. A few months ago, I found out that one of my old drug friends had taken his own life. It hit me like a speeding train. The news took my breath away. Not because he was a closer friend than any other that I had in those circles, but I think because that very nearly was me. I accept the close call I had with death. I know now that the Reaper was in my house. I feel guilty for coming out the other side. Like, why me? Why me and not someone else? I didn't deserve survival more than any other. That guilt chips away at my anxiety. But God knows how thankful I am to be here, able to tell this story. I'm not going to end this with a message to not take drugs. It's pointless. There's nothing I or anyone else can say to you about staying away from them. Nothing you will listen to. because the cold hard truth of the situation is that if you want to take them, you will. If the romanticism from the movies appeals to you, then you'll take them. So all I can do is bid you compassion, but not blame. Thank you if you have got this far. All I wanted to do was share my experience with you. I hope you found tonight's chronicle of interest. Jack is a good friend of mine, and I felt his story was immensely valuable and important to share. Before we end tonight's episode, I'd like to reshare with you our website, www.deadsouls.co.uk. As well as these podcast episodes, my team and I also conduct investigations and research into all manner of fringe subjects. Please take a look and reach out if you feel that we can help you, or if you'd like to share your stories and encounters with us. Nothing is too astonishing. We are ready to believe you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.